listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. As a licensed private investigator and instructor in nonviolent crisis intervention, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some remarkable people. I will bring you some of these incredibly talented, caring, and entertaining people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. This show will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, and dealing with addictions. Having escorted thousands of teens to specialized schools and programs, returned hundreds of runaways, and retrieved many abducted children, I bring a unique outlook to what families today are going through and what can be done to help them thrive. One of the things I've learned over the years by working with thousands of families is, if mama's not happy, nobody in the family's happy. Which brings us to our topic today, how mama got her groove back. To discuss this, I'm thrilled to have as my guest today, Alana Pratt. Alana is an author and columnist for eHarmony and a noted relationship expert on CBS, TLC, and Fox. She knows that when mama's happy, everybody's happy. She hosts a number one radio show, How Mama Got Her Groove Back, and talks about maintaining thriving relationships on Christian Carter's Catch Him and Keep Him show. Alana supports happy, balanced families with her women's membership, Redefining Sexuality, and her men's membership entitled, Get Her to Say Yes. So, with improving families in mind, Alana, tell us, how does mama get her groove back?
Oh, Alan, I'm so grateful and honored to be on your show. Thank you. And actually, I've been considering changing that from how mama got her groove back to how mama got her groove on. You see, I think the problem for so many of us moms is that we're actually trying to go back to who we were before the kids, but it's really not possible because never again are we going to have 8 hours of uninterrupted sleep, probably. We'll probably never have 3 hours to primp before getting ready. And, you know, we never go to sleep until we know our kids are safe and sound. So the challenge, I don't think it's about getting back. It's actually about how can we take full responsibility for our happiness, our radiance, our peace, our passion, our pleasure, and our fulfillment, not back then, but now in this new phase of life. And it really boils down to self-care.
I like that. And I like your point is that how is she going to get it on? Because she's starting from here and moving forward, not looking back to what was it that I was back then or what could I have been back then? This is what I've got. This is my responsibility. How can I get it on now and move forward? So I like that.
So
now I'd also noticed, now was that sort of your motivation? Because I noticed that you had written How to Be and Stay Sexy.
Yes, that's my first, actually it's my second book, but yeah, what happened to me, Alan, is that my mom got cancer, and very, very quickly, within 10 days, she was gone, and the week after was my sister's wedding, and I got pregnant at my sister's wedding, and within a year and a half, I got a divorce, and then I lost the house, and I lost my self-esteem, and I hit rock bottom, and it was when I looked in my son's eyes, and I had promised him when he was born that I would be a woman of grace, and of power, and of joy, and I wasn't. So I began to take full responsibility, and I call them sensual practices, feminine practices, but really what they are is filling up my cup first, so I can give to him from the overflow. And it was really kind of silly how it all happened about being the sexy mom expert. I was on Lisa Gibbons' national radio show for a while, and they coined me their sexy mom expert, and I coached Lisa through Dancing with the Stars, and that's how that niche was born, and that's how that book was born.
Wow. You know, and one of I hate to jump backwards, but it sounds like there's probably a whole nother story behind you got pregnant at your sister's wedding, but
I don't know, but really my sister and I, as we were driving, my sister got married in the middle of the Rocky Mountains, and we were so devastated that we just pretended she was on a vacation. We just didn't know how to process it, so we just partied and pretended. And then we came back the week after, and we, you know, held the funeral and cleaned out her house. And I had no idea I was pregnant. I was lifting heavy furniture and drinking all the leftover wine in her closet and crying every day. And you know, you don't think a soul could really come in and thrive within a body and a heart when that was going on. But my son is my angel. I was able, and this is very important for listeners to recognize, I think, especially moms, we have the capacity that's so rich, so wide, so deep to feel everything. I was feeling complete bliss that I was pregnant and complete pain and grief that I'd lost my mom. And if you really slow down, if you feel the core of pain, it's love. And if you feel the core of bliss, it's love. And so who we are is love. When we don't resist what's going on, we open, we surrender, we take time to feel. That's one of the keys, I believe, of quote-unquote getting our groove on,
right,
is knowing that when we take the time to listen, we're very, very powerful creatures.
Well, with all of that going on, I mean, I think, how did you discover your mommy's strength at the same time that you were, you know, you were dealing with the situation with your mom, but you were also pregnant and you were enjoying that, but you were also looking towards the fact that you're about to do this alone.
Yeah, well, I was trying to make it work. I didn't initially say, let's get a divorce. I was trying to make it work, but it was really never going to work. What I stumbled upon, and I'm sure you've heard in a lot of interviews these days and in the media, this feminine power, feminine empowerment. And to me, feminine power is really not about the push, 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 go, 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 do, do, do. That's more of the masculine power. Feminine power is about allowing, receiving, surrendering. And it's not passive, it's active, but it takes so much faith and trust and depth, the power to ask for help, the power to say no, the power to put yourself first. And this is really what I began to learn, and this was my mommy's strength. I had to trust. I had to go deep and wide, not push forward and spin in my mind. So moms, if you can slow down enough to allow, listen to your intuition in your body, not your strategy in your mind, really that instinctual receiving part. You'll learn to feel, I could be cooperative here. I could be collaborative here. I could make this work smart, not hard. And it really stops the fear and the spinning in the head. And then you really begin to feel that you're not alone. The universe really is on your side, helping you, kind of like you're flowing down a river, not swimming up the river. But that allowing of that support can't happen when you're spinning in your head. So the solution is to drop in to your feelings, drop in to your heart, and drop into your womb of creativity for solutions.
Right. Well, it sounds like then that being a mother really deepened your faith. I mean, it not only taught you more about you, but it deepened your faith across the board.
Absolutely. I mean, I've never experienced the pain of losing a loved one. I mean, actually, it's not true. I'd lost my best friend when I was 16, but it was like an abrupt news to me, you know, that they're dead. This, I had to see her. I had to see the deterioration, and I had a chance to either close my heart and quote-unquote deal with it or open my heart and feel the process. And so the pain of losing my mom, and I opened my heart until she was literally like dead in front of me, and it was a choice. Just go clean up the room and do my thing, or just be with the pain, and that's where I found love. And then 9 months later, putting my baby on my breast and feeling the bliss, that was love too. And I couldn't have done that by myself. I didn't know how to deal with that pain by myself. I had to let go. I had to surrender. And I wasn't willing to not heal the grief of my mom's death and be less than present with my son. So I was very much into my faith, very much, and helped me get through this. And even I remember holding my belly when my baby was in my womb, saying, I'm not crying because of you. I'm crying to feel and to heal and release this emotion so that when you're here, I'm present with you.
Wow.
So I'm very grateful.
Wow. So many mothers, I think, get overwhelmed anyway at this point. What advice would you give to mothers, you know, that get to that point, that become just overwhelmed with the whole process?
Yeah. Well, we all get overwhelmed. That's totally normal. I believe motherhood is an expansion, is a gift for our growth. Yes, we provide so much for our kids, but it's really for us. So my capacity to be with my own emotions, the pain of my mom, allows me now to be the space for my son's emotions. I don't have to cut him off if he comes to me crying or gets upset. I don't have to stop. I can be patient. I can be open. I can say, wow, tell me more. I can be compassionate. I don't have to fix him. Because when I do that, when I'm the space for him, only because I've been the space for me, he gets this feeling of being held and safe, and he finds his own solutions and putters off to do his own thing. But when I resist him, when I try to fix him, when I'm not the space for him, the fights get worse, the temper tantrums get bigger, the kids shut their room and stop communicating with the family. So it's really our responsibility to be with our own emotions fully, and we can then give that to our kids. Does that make sense?
Oh, that makes perfect sense. And I think that parents in general, I mean, it's not just moms or even just single parents. Parents in general, if they can grasp that focus, I think it would not only be happier themselves, but would certainly also help the children by modeling what it is that they're doing. The children, I think, are going to come out of it better as well.
Yeah. My son can sense my energy, and his behavior is directly related to mine every time. So I have a couple tips, if I could share, of how moms can deal with overwhelm, but one that just came to me as well. When we go to bed at night, we do what I call thank yous. And we even say thank you for the challenges, because they gave us an opportunity to develop our patience, our compassion, or our forgiveness. But he'll tell me, you know, Mommy, thank you for the strawberries and the stars, things that I completely take for granted. So putting your child to bed with gratitude is a way for them to have less nightmares, a way for them to open their heart, a way to calm their energy. And I've experienced he's woken up in a much better mood. And once he wakes up, this is what I do, Moms. I really believe that self-care, as I said at the beginning, is the number one priority. When you're full, you've got something to give. When you're empty, you have nothing to give. So I created this 700 for my son. Got a little clock radio. He's 7. I started this when he was about 3. And I said, you can't come in Mommy's room until 700, because I'm looking for patience and kindness. And you'll be my hero if you don't come in, because then I'll find it. But if you come in before that, Mommy might not be patient and kind. And it did take a couple days until he got the hang of it, and I had to bring him back to his room, no eye contact, hand on the small of the back, put him back in there. But by day 3, he goes, Mommy, it's 700. And I opened my arms, and I snuggled him, and I said, oh, you're my hero. Mommy's so patient and kind now. And we had a great morning. And Moms, what I want you to do with that time before 700, you can sleep, you can journal, you can meditate, you can exercise, you can make love with your beloved, you could do whatever nourishes your soul, because that's our job as moms, to be full first, so we have something to give those we love.
Wow. First of all, I got to tell you, first of all, it's beautiful, and then my second thought is, going along with what you're saying is, thank you for reminding me of that. Thank you for reminding us of that, the gratitude part. And again, I think so many of us as parents, we get wrapped up in everything else, whatever everything else is for each person. I'm as guilty as anybody, and I will, when I'm in the right place, I will start with those types of things. But I think we do that, and then we start taking for granted again the kids. We take for granted our, you know, the love of our life, and we stop, you know, bringing up those things that were so important for them to know, which is the gratitude of how much we appreciate what it is that they're doing. So thank you.
Yeah,
for that.
You know,
we all need
you're
that.
You're welcome, Alan. And I just wanted to share with what you just said. I'm a coach, right? So one of my clients just told me this past week she has a tumor on her spine. And if she doesn't get it removed, she'll be paralyzed for sure. And if she gets it removed, there's a chance she'll be paralyzed. And she's a woman of well-being. She's a chiropractor. And you know, just to be the space for her to slow down and be still and feel. And she gives to her clients, to her kids, to her family, and she doesn't take the time to give to her. And now the universe has stopped her in her tracks, and she has to ask for help. She has to receive. She has to feel. So it's so important that we take time to remember to take care of ourselves first and listen to our intuition. What do we really need? Moms, do we need a date night? Do we need a girls' night out? Do we need to say some affirmations with our family in the car as we drive them to school? Do we need to do these thank yous at night? Do we need to turn dinner time into more of a ritual and really light the candles and everybody gets to make a wish? Is it that you've got to get to the gym and you need to learn how to make that a priority, not like it would be nice if? These are the things that motherhood can be very thankless. Mm-hmm. And if you don't fill yourself up, nothing's going to go with any grace or ease or joy.
Well, along those lines, we have an emailed question coming in from a parent that I think ties right into that. It says, as a mother of three small children and a small business owner, it is extremely hard to feel anything but exhausted at the end of the day. Before the kids came along, I went to the gym, had dinner with my girlfriends, had a manicure every couple of weeks. I thought having children would make my life even more complete. I truly do love my children, but I feel heavy-hearted so much of the time and guilty if I take any time for myself. Worst of all, my body has suffered, and I have joined the ranks of women who are 20-plus pounds overweight. I am planning to buy your book, but what advice can you give me and others like me?
First of all, just because hopefully you're listening right now, I want you to breathe. We're doing all the time, and I can give you lots of solutions, but that's just going to be more doing. So just for this minute, just for 30 seconds, I want you to relax from the top of your head. I want you to soften your face. I want you to relax your shoulders. I want you to open your heart, even if it makes you cry. I want you to feel wherever you are, the chair that you're in, feel it as Mother Earth holding you. Relax your belly. Let the stress drain out of your legs and just drain all the way into Mother Earth. She'll drink it in like compost and turn it back into nourishing, cleansed energy for you. Right now, I just want you to surrender and relax and know I hear you. I understand. I validate you. I have so much compassion and empathy for exactly where you are. You have every right to be feeling everything you're feeling right now. Every right. And you've been doing your best every step of the way. You've done nothing wrong. Nothing wrong. You're doing an amazing, amazing job. So next, the guilt. The guilt is, I want you to imagine that the guilt is like this energetic force from society telling you what you should do and everyone else's opinions of what you should do. But it's not coming from your deepest core. It's not coming from your heart. Heart is love. It's not coming from your womb of creativity that birthed these beautiful children. That's love deep in there as well. Guilt is something that you're putting your attention on the outside, trying to look good, trying to do it right, trying to be a good mom. It's all externally driven. So I want you to exhale away as if they're clouds, each of those external things that are bringing the guilt. And I want you to sink into your heart and just listen. Maybe your heart is exhausted. Maybe it's mad at you for not listening. Maybe it has great wisdom. I don't know where your heart is, but your job for me tonight, once the kids are down, is to get into the bath, light a candle, pour a cup of tea, a glass of wine, whatever you'd like, and listen. And I want you to talk with your heart. Your heart knows what you need. We're not going to listen to the mind of guilt. We're going to listen to the heart of love. Your job as a mom is not to be perfect or to have your kids like you all the time or to look good in the world all the time. Your job as a mom, quite often, is unconditional love, fierce love. It's not always going to make everybody happy to put yourself first and take care of yourself. It's really easy to have all these energy vampires around your life and have you sucked here and sucked there and sucked here. But at some point, you're just going to give, and it sounds like that's the tipping point you're at. So I've got you. I'm holding you. I hear you. Start to listen to what that unconditional love inside and fierce love says to you, and then take one step at a time of what you need to do to put yourself first, fill up your cup first. And then from there, you'll know who to ask for help from. You'll know what to say no to. You'll know what to say yes to. And slowly but surely, within a short period of time, things will begin to shift. And if you need a little extra help, my book, you just go to howtobeandstaysexy.com. It's a great book. If you need a little more personal attention, I'm here as a coach. Just know you're not alone. I get it, and you're going to be just fine. And thank you for the courage for asking for help. That's a great first step. It's a great first step.
Well, thank you for that. I've now stepped into a bath. I'm feeling wonderful. I've lit a few candles. We're going to take a break, and we will be back in 1 minute.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
All right, we're back, and I am fortunate enough to be in a studio that has a bath with candles and everything. So at least I'm relaxed. You know, one of the things that I got out of that as you were explaining it, which was just beautiful, that was wonderful, was you used the word should a few times, where a lot of us get caught up in should. And one of the mm-hmm. terms that I use, and to catch myself, is I'll say, you know what, I've been shoulding on myself again. I need to stop that. So
yes.
So at times, if you know, it's a term, you know, don't should on yourself. It won't be good. So, but anyway, yes, that was great. And again, I also hope that person was listening, and I want everybody to know that I appreciate those that email in or that instant message in, any way that you can get something in, or even if you call in, you know, we appreciate your all of your questions, and we'll do everything we can to get them through, which we have another one coming in. This one says, what a wonderful message. My daughter is going through so many changes with a new baby that is 11 months old. Her husband is complaining that she is too preoccupied with their little girl to take time for him. She confided in me that she has lost her desire to be intimate, and she attributes it to not feeling sexy with the extra weight she has put on, and the fact that the baby is a lot of work. She is struggling with what she describes as an emotional numbness. What is your advice to young women with this feeling?
Oh, I hear you. I completely get it. There are shifts going on in her hormonally that she can't, control, okay? It's creating a loss of libido, but yet emotionally, without that foundational intimacy of her partner, things will only get worse, and as you say so accurately, this emotional numbness. So what needs to happen is she needs to realize that when she takes care of the baby, it's 100% gratification, right? You do something, the baby gets happy, okay? But if you look over to the husband, you feel like depleted and it's work. But you can't hide in the kid. You can't hide in the child. You have to stay open, even though it's scary. Look at me, I've got a big fat body. Look at me, I don't have a libido. And even if we make love, it's all dry and crunchy. Look at me, I'm scared. I make mistakes every day with my child. Look at me, I'm scared that you don't think I'm sexy anymore. Like, you have to, instead of going away from the man and going towards what's safer, which is the child, you have to be able to stay open to the partner, have these communications of share your vulnerability and ask for what you need. Right now, I can't make love, but oh, how I want you to hold me. Let me caress you. Just hold me. You don't have to be 0 to 60. There's so much intimacy and pleasure and tenderness and intimacy that can be had and can take the relationship closer, deeper, more powerful. Don't turn away. That's one of the biggest problems. And in terms of your own libido and pleasure, etc. Dance. This is an opportunity for moms to love themselves unconditionally. We used to love ourselves conditionally. Remember I said, you know, the 3 hours of primping, we look right. Perfect from the gym, our nipples don't leak, you know, we're not all ripped up in our vagina. Like, we have this new body to love. Your job, ladies, is to get in front of that mirror, naked. I know that's really intense, but do it naked. And I want you to dance and love every part of you that you're shaming.
Okay.
I want you to love the big belly. I want you to love the big breasts. I want you to love the stretch marks. I want you to love it. It'll probably make you cry. But your job is to first love yourself. If you don't love yourself, you cannot make room for him to love you. So your practice is always self-love, self-forgiveness.
I love it.
And then the... Go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, everybody now, everybody dance, except those of you that are driving. But those of you that are home and you're listening through your computer, take off your clothes. Well, maybe not if you're at work, okay? If you're at work, I don't know about the taking off the clothes part, but...
Yeah, keep your clothes on at work.
Yeah, but at home, take off your clothes, get in front of the mirror, and dance. I love that.
I'm so serious, Alan. It completely works. Because here's the thing, Alan. All of those emotions that she's a numb about, guess where they are? They're stuck in her body.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's that going to do? Make her spin in her mind. And is that going to make her feel juicy or be juicy? No. So if she dances, she gets moving all these emotions that are stuck in her. She releases the grief. There is a grief of leaving the old life where you were single. There is a grief to letting go of this body, and now you have to serve another child for the rest of your life. There's fear. What does my husband think of me? There's exhaustion. I haven't slept in months. There's so much stored in a woman's body that she gets very crunchy, and she doesn't want anybody near her. But if she dances and gets rid of it, she can begin to feel pleasure again in her body, self-love again, and then move back towards her partner. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense. I love it. And I know one of the things that you had mentioned, you talked about communication, just how important it is, and you talked about asking for what you want. So let's talk about some communication techniques on how you can ask for what you want, because I think
perfect.
I think there's a lot of people that may want to ask for what they want, they just don't know how.
Okay, great. Couple tips. First, to set a man up to win because he wants to make you happy, begin the beginning of your sentence with, "It would make me happy if." "It would mean the world to me if." "Oh, you'd be my hero if." "I'm really scared to ask you, but it would just make me so juicy if." You know, start it like that. So he's like, "Oh, I can win here." And then ask for what you want. So that's a tip in terms of how you talk to him on a regular basis. However, there's an additional practice and ritual. And you might think I'm totally dorky, and I know I'm a coach, and this is how I live, and maybe it's not how everybody lives, but it works. Write this down. If you're driving, listen to the recording. Three questions. One, tell me something you like about me. Question number two, tell me something you think we align on. Question number three, tell me something you think I should know. Here are the rules. You're only allowed to say thank you when the person gives their answer. You're not allowed to have a comment, an opinion, a judgment, a rebuttal, nothing. Just thank you. This practice is done for 40 minutes, and it's never spoken of again. And the last rule is you're not allowed to use the word you when you're sharing. Well, when you... No. I feel blah, blah, blah when this happens. Okay? If you do this practice, tell me something you like about me, you remember why you like the person. You gotta sometimes focus on that when they've been pissing you off. Do that for about 5 minutes. Tell me something you think we align on. Whenever things get rough, we think we're on two different teams, right? Enemies. No. We're in this together. That brings back the alignment. Tell me something you think I should know. This is where you say, as the husband, I'm feeling my needs not met sexually, but I don't want to burden you because you're so tired, and I don't want to go on porn, and I don't know what to do. And all she says is, thank you. And she says, I haven't been able to sleep. I think you're going to think I'm a fat cow, and I'm really resentful that I have to do everything, and I love you, but I'm just not feeling open to you. He says, thank you. So you get out everything that's going on, all the elephants in the living room, but at the end of it, even light a candle. You know me, I'm into candles. And then blow out the candle and never speak about it again. And you'd be amazed. If you do this once a week, profound shifts will occur. And elephants will never have any length of time to stay in your living room, whether you're just newly married with a baby or you've got a teenager that's driving you bonkers or whatever.
Now, do you also flip this so that you have 40 minutes where where you know, she's speaking, and then do you have?
Oh.
You know,
I apologize.
Next
this
week,
is back and forth.
Back and forth.
I didn't say that clearly. This is totally back and forth. Tell me something you like about me. Thank you. The next person, tell me something that you like about me. Thank you. It's totally back and forth.
Okay, so it's one.
Sorry for not being clear.
No, that's okay. That's okay. I'm glad that you're putting it out there because I was envisioning it and I'm going, okay, it's 40 minutes is one person's turn, then do we turn in 40 minutes the other? But instead, you're saying it's one the other, one the other.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know what people's religious or spiritual beliefs are, but whatever works for you, I say call in God, call in the angels, call in whoever, call in Mother Earth, whatever works for you. Let this communication be held by something bigger than you and make an intention. This communication is meant to heal and deepen our profound relationship. Intentions are very powerful.
That's great. Now, I think that's a very good thing to do. I think, again, it's another one of those things to where I say thank you for reminding us, all of us that are listening, of this. Because, again, it's one of those things to where we can point out the things that we do like, that we are so grateful about, that sometimes in our haste to get through the day and all of the things that are there, sometimes I think we just forget. So,
You know, and sometimes we forget in our haste, but sometimes we're scared, Alan. We don't know how to face our partner with this dorky communication technique we heard in a radio show, right? We don't even know how to do it. So sometimes I, as a coach, hold a space for a couple, either on the phone if they're far away or in my sanctuary in my home, where I'm the... not like I'm a mediator, but I'm the space holder. Just like I said, bring in God or bring in the angels or bring in Mother Earth, whatever. I'm that space so that they can relax and tell the truth. They're afraid if they speak their truth, the other person won't follow the rules and they won't just say thank you. They say, yeah, but blah, 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 right? Mm-hmm. I hold that sacred space. So just know you don't have to give up even if you're scared.
Well, now, a lot of this applies now to a dual parent situation. What about in the single parent situation, going back to that point when you have somebody that is having to deal with this and they don't have that person to share these things with?
Well, that's where I actually pretend, personally, because I'm a single mom, I would either have a friend hold the space for me, and I would imagine, you know, talking to whoever I need to talk to. Maybe I was mad at my ex-husband, but I didn't, you know, there's no communication there. So someone would actually hold the space for me. I would close my eyes, they would close their eyes, and every time I'd say something, they'd just say thank you. We just need to be heard. If we don't get these feelings and these thoughts and these beliefs and these emotions out of us, they stay in us and they make us sick.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a single mother, if you're listening, or a single father, get a friend to be the space for somebody you need to communicate with and just get it out and get them to say thank you. That'll bring so much clarity, because once the caca is gone, you'd be amazed at the wisdom that's underneath and the clarity and the guidance that is there. So there's no need to be a victim. You can just do it with a friend.
Yeah, I like
or
that.
Or a coach like me or whatever.
Or a coach, exactly. And in essence, what you're having is a surrogate listener. And the surrogate, it might actually be easier for some of the things that you want to get out to do that with a surrogate, because, again, if it's somebody that you don't have that greater relationship with, maybe you don't have to worry about the fact that they're going to come back and say something, because you know the surrogate is just going to say thank you. Beautiful.
Yeah. It's true. Even when I coach moms, we might go through these, they're called dyads. I've been trained by a company called Warrior Sage for years, and this is where I've learned this profound practice. And when I do sessions with moms, sometimes we can clean up within a session years of harboring with him, that she just shows up clean, clear, open. For, you know, she's has compassion and forgiveness already in her heart, and she just moves forward. Sometimes it's not even necessary.
I like it. Now, what advice would you give for the men or for the husbands in this situation? What are the things that we can do to contribute to make this as wonderful an experience as possible? This or just the experience of life together?
I say be the leader of romance and be the leader of communication. Because if you create the space and you set that timer for 40 minutes and you put on the candle and you give the rules, that you're the banks of the river. See, men, you got to think of you as the banks of the river so she can be the flowing river. If you don't set up those banks of the river, guess what? She's going to turn into a man. and she's going to boss you around because you haven't done it. It's just sort of what we women do. If we don't have those the men holding the space for us so we can surrender, we do it ourselves. And that's when we become crunchy and bitchy and nasty. So be the man. Be the man with heart, though. Think about being a mind talking to her, a heart connecting with her, and a pelvis, like that's your sexual, sensual, spiritual connection with her on a body level, body, heart, and mind. That's your job, to be with her in those three realms. And, you know, run the bath. Ask her, you know, like, okay, sweetheart, this is my loving guidance. I want you to go to yoga, and I want us to figure out, you know, a trade with you and your other mom friend so you can go Monday, she can go Tuesday, this kind of thing. Guide her. Don't make her wrong. Don't fix her. Guide her. This is your job as a man, to learn the difference between fixing and guiding, okay? A king, think of yourself as a king. Think of yourself as a ship, right? There's nothing wrong with her. She just needs help. And she's probably scared. And so you don't want to pity her or fix her. You want to empower her so she can embody the juiciness of who she is. She's just disconnected. So you got to say, sweetie, go for a walk in nature. The girlfriend that you know, she comes home more loving and juicy, not the one that gossips or man bashes. Make sure she goes out with her. Make sure that you are okay in communicating your needs sexually, but you're willing to, at least throughout this potential period, if you're a new mom or something, of just having massage and being naked and tender and intimate together. You got to step up. Men, we love you. You need to step up with deep, deep, deep heart.
Well, and I love the point you brought up in regards to the king, and because it's kind of the way that I approach things, but I have said that the one that I love is my queen. Okay, I love her. She is my queen. But to me, then, you know, and I am the king, but it's that,
yeah,
it's, you know, I'm going to treat you like a queen. I want to be treated like a king. And I think as long as both parties do that, then I think it works out great. I think as soon as one starts to drop that, you then have mm-hmm. a subservient situation, which I don't believe works. So,
I mean,
would you agree that everything needs to be reciprocal, so that you don't have a situation, again, when you're mentioning about the being the king, that's great, but he has to understand she needs to be the queen, or you just have someone that you're trying to be subservient to you.
Yeah, very, very well said, and a very good point, Alan. And in terms of bringing out what I call the nobility of a man, I have a free report on my site for men, gethertosayyes.com, and that's for single men or married men or fathers or whatever, but they're all the qualities of what I call a man who's in his heart, who's noble, who's confident, and who knows how to inspire and empower the people around him, be it the kids, be it the wife, be it at work, the whole thing. So it's a very good point you made, Alan. Thank you.
Right. Now, and let's talk a little bit more about your book. How do you hope women will use the book? And again, tell us again how they can find the book.
Thank you. So yes, if they go to howtobeandstaysexy.com, that's where you can order my book. There's also some more free content with videos and interviews and guided meditations for women at redefiningsexuality.com. That's my women's membership. How do I want them to use the book? There are tips, there are tools, there are practices, there's my life journey. I mean, I'm a pretty vulnerable lady, but I share even more in my book, so that wherever you are, you know it's okay. And if you just have the energy for one baby step, there's something there for you to do. And if you have the time for a more deeper practice, you can go there as well. So the book is a series of stories and also really bite-sized little pieces for you. It's also recorded, my voice. I've recorded the whole thing because many of my listeners from around the world, it's really been awesome. They say that my enthusiasm, my empowerment, my passion really comes through in the audio recordings. So, and with men as well, I have a product for the men on Get Her to Say Yes with videos and audios and even a confidence-building, empowering meditation for them as well. Because we really need to put our self-care, our self-worth, our self-healing, our self-empowerment as a priority. I know we want to fix him or fix her, and you're probably accurate, and there's probably things to fix. But if we put ourselves first, energetically, we're showing the other person we're not coming from judgment, we're coming from responsibility. And you'd be amazed how quickly your partner will step up and take care of their stuff. But if you start with judgment of how you need to change, you'd be amazed how quickly they get defensive. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense. Yeah, and I think that's a big issue with a lot of people. I mean, not only just a husband and wife or a boyfriend and girlfriend, I think we have that also with our children. You know, with the children themselves, when we're talking about situations, or for instance, you know, my company, we will set up a family contract with them, but we can't just go in and say, okay, kids, here's what we're going to do. We are just going to fix you. Because what that says is you're the problem, as opposed to like you're saying, going in and saying we are a family and these are the things that we're going to work on. We're not just going to work on this, but we're going to work on things that we can do as parents to facilitate the things that we all need to get done.
So that's so stunning. My son and I get consequences too, just like he does. We have level A, anarchy. This is behavior that we identify in our family. Level B, bullying, bossing, whining. Level C, cooperation. And level D, democracy, doing the right thing. And so when he's doing something I don't care for, I'll say, what level behavior is that? And level A and B is unacceptable. Anarchy and bullying is unacceptable, and with that is a consequence. But level C and D, that's acceptable behavior. And so if mommy swears or yells or doesn't keep her word or something, that I get consequences. And so he'll make me do 10 push-ups or no dessert or whatever he decides is my consequence. And he gets consequences too. He doesn't get his wee or, you know, whatever.
Right.
But we hold each other to the highest, and it breeds great respect and authenticity. And he's a knight in training. I really do. And I am a queen holding the space for him.
Oh, I love that. I love that. I think if everybody would look at that's how we want to raise our children and that's how we want to raise our boys, that would be great. Now, you touched on democracy. And
Say it again. Just cut out.
I said you touched on democracy. Now,
Now
this is always an interesting thing, because one of the errors that I think some parents make are the ones that I've got another caller calling in, but it's a blocked number, so I'm not going to take it, is the parents that then try to become the best friend. And so they try to set up a democracy in the house where the child has, in essence, an equal vote, because that's the belief of democracy. So how do you break that down? Because, again, we know that really doesn't work if it's a total democracy, because, again, at 7 years old, you can't be making some of the decisions.
Absolutely. Yes, I'm not saying he's a man, he's a boy. So I still make the rules. And I'm really careful that my job is not for him to like me. As soon as I made that decision, everything got a lot easier. My job is not for my son to like me. It's for me to do what love would do, to build a strong man in society. That's my job.
Thank you.
The right thing sometimes pisses him off. But what I don't want is an entitled, you know, child. And I don't want him being in charge. I'm in charge. I just want to empower, as a 7-year-old, the best decisions for him to do the right thing. So if I turned my back, he wouldn't, you know, hit the cat, because he'd do the right thing with the cat. If I turned my back, he'd pick up the piece of garbage. He'd clear his plate. He'd make his bed. He'd do it without asking. And I also don't give rewards for what I consider to be acceptable behavior. Like, it's to be expected that you do your chores in the house, in my opinion.
Right.
It's to be expected that you treat others with kindness and honor and good manners. I'm not going to praise you and give you extra things just to be what I consider a helpful part of the family, but you can earn extra if you do extra work around the house. That's fine. I can do rewards that way. But he doesn't like living with me as much as he likes living with his dad, although I believe he respects me.
Mm-hmm.
I get a lot more discipline problems at my house than he does at his dad's, because I hold a really loving but firm, consistent line, and I think he pushes against me more because I am so firm. It makes him feel good, even though the experience is that he's a piece of work sometimes, I think I actually feel really safe. So any parents out there that are feeling disheartened by having to have this consistent discipline and your kids, quote unquote, might not like you right now, I know they love you and I know they respect you. And there will come a time when something just falls aside and they really look at you and go, you've been the most incredible parent. I know that I have confidence that I'm a good, you know, human being in society because of how you've parented me.
You know, I am so glad that you touched on that because, again, that's a huge issue, especially in divorced families where you have that situation of one parent, you know, is much more lenient or they're focused on the fact that, well, you know, I need to get, you know, I need to get more friendship with them. So they start allowing them to do things and you have that struggle. And I think that, and I struggle with it as I know that, you know, many divorced people do. They struggle with the fact of, you know, do I make this decision knowing that they're necessarily not going to like it, but yet it's not the same rule in the other house. And I know, I mean,
yeah.
in an ideal situation, you know, you talk with the other parent and you try to establish the same rules and everything else. Yes, that's great in an ideal situation. It's good to try that. But when it doesn't happen, you know, I love the fact that you're touching on the fact that, you know, as long as you are secure within yourself, that you're doing that you're doing the right thing. I think that's the big key of what you just said.
Yeah, and the big key of what you just said, Alan, is if that we have enough self-love and we're grounded enough and we're in our heart of truth, not spinning in our mind, not seeking, I'm so empty that I only feel good if my kid likes me. If that's the only way you're feeling good, you're setting yourself up to destroy your child's well-being. Because it's not the kid's job to like you. It's your job to like you. It's your job to appreciate yourself, acknowledge yourself, fill yourself up, go to the gym, be with people that are positive in your life, do your personal growth. That's our job as adults, that when we're solid, then, you know, I said to my son one day, I love you so much, I don't care if you hate me till you're 18. I love you that much. And sort of stopped him in his tracks because he realized the buck stops here. I will always hold the space for you to be a knight in training, and that's how it goes. And I won't name call your dad or do these kind of things, but it's different at mommy's house.
That's right.
And and if I am empty, then I'll let him get away with stuff. If I'm empty, I'll make sure he likes me and I'll get my fulfillment from my son. That's not fair. It's too much pressure to put on a kid. A kid's job is to be a kid. It's our job as adults to go out there and fill ourselves up. You know, read my book, do the practices, get coaching if you need to, be with powerful friends, be with your spiritual center or your church, listen to Alan's interviews, do whatever you need to do to be full first, heal what needs to be healed, face, sit in the fire. If you need to sit in the fire, sit in the fire. To know who you really are and to know how strong you really are, that feels so good. It's confidence beyond anything on the outside. No money, no girl, no guy, no anything is ever going to make you feel as good as being at peace with who you are on the inside.
And that's what they're going to pick up on. Your children are going to pick up on just that. Yes, and I love that. And when you brought up the thing about doing a disservice to the kids, you are. You're doing a disservice to the kids. You're also doing a disservice to yourself. And where you say that the kids are going to have a negative effect on it, guess what? When they turn 18 and they move and you've put your entire life into them, you're now the person that is going to really be empty.
Yeah, well said. Well said. And, you know, even that little baby practice of 700, you can't come into your room, my room. I'm telling my son to respect me.
That's right.
I'm respecting myself. I don't want him to go out and be used by others and be a yes to everybody. I want him to understand his own boundaries. So he tells me when he needs to fill up his bucket. That's what I've called him. Like if he's really empty, I go, honey, do you need to fill up your bucket? And so now he knows. He goes in his room and he slams the doors. I'm like, I need to fill up my bucket. And I respect it. I respect it because he's learned how to respect me. And now I believe he's going to be able to create healthy boundaries in his own life, be able to say no when he means no and yes when he means yes, even though he's only 7.
Yeah, that is incredible. I just glanced over at the clock, and we are down to about 2 minutes. I just want to thank you so much for coming on the show. I want to redo the invitation to have you come back only next time to be in studio. You know, I would love to have you back in here. I think there's so much more that we can touch on. I think the subject fits this show perfectly. And again, for any of you that are out there, except for those of you that are driving and can't write it down, again, You can go to, and again, give me the websites again that they can go to for more information.
Yeah, thank you. So my book, howtobeandstaysexy.com for the women, or free content at redefiningsexuality.com. And the men, go to gethertosayyes.com for your free report. And what a pleasure it's been. I feel so grateful, Alan. Thank you.
Alana, I am grateful as well. Keep doing what you're doing. I will do the same. And again, I look forward to doing this so soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. And again, for those of you that are driving, if you couldn't write that down, if you go to our website at www.answers4thefamilyblog.com, you can go there. All of Alana's information will be there, as well as that of other past guests, so you can get whatever information you need. We can also take information if you have upcoming ideas for guests or for future shows. Go to the website, let us know, who you think might be a good one. Also, if you have comments on today's show, let us know. And again, know that I'm going to be out there trying to do what I can to catch people doing something good. I hope you do the same. Again, have a great week. We are out of here.
Listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk.